glad you're here. Fellowship's sweeter, knowing you're near. It's so good to see you. I hope that it's fair. Everyone loves you. We're glad you're here.
Philippians chapter 2, verse 9. Says, therefore, God has highly exalted him and bestowed on him the name that is above every name, so that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and that every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. That is a fantastic passage and a great truth today. Philippians chapter 2, verses 9, 10. And 11. Friends, so good to see you. Happy Thursday. It is Mark and Friends, and every Thursday I have the great joy of being the guest host for Mark and Friends. It's really is a joy. I enjoy it. I've been doing it for several years now, and it is highlighted on my calendar every week. Yeah, when I get to hang out with you every Thursday. Hope you're having just a blessed week. Our friends at WLUJ doing their on-air share-a-thon. So if you can, be praying for WLUJ. It's been a busy week, a good week, and yet a productive week as well. So, hey, for Mark and Friends today, I think you're going to love this program. We're going to hear really the testimony of Lee Strobel, and he's going to be talking about the case for a creator. Lee Strobel was really a former investigative journalist for a newspaper in Chicago, and he was an atheist until he found Christ by investigating the claims of Christ. And his heart now is for Jesus, and he loves Christian apologetics for sure. And so here is Lee Strobel today for Mark and Friends on the case for a creator.
It's great to be with you. Thanks so much. And I love the idea of this series, to think again, to talk about why it is we as Christians really believe what we believe. I think it's important stuff. But I got to confess something to you up front. There are times when I get in a conversation with someone about why I believe what I believe, and it does not go well. Any of you ever have that kind of experience? I mean, I had the most embarrassing thing happen a few years ago. I was down south with my buddy Mark Middleburg, and we were teaching at a conference. And the next day, before he flew out, we wanted to get something to eat. So we saw one of these Cracker Barrel restaurants. You ever been to one of these? I'd never been to one, but we said, let's go. So we noticed they have rocking chairs on the front porch where people can people watch. And sitting in the first rocking chair is a young woman. And just as I step in front of this young woman, I hear her say, "What's a deist?" And I thought, I just wrote a book about that. So I turned on my heel and I looked her in the eye and I said, "Young lady, a deist is someone who believes that God created the universe," but then he walked away. I said, "A deist is someone who believes that God is distant and detached and disinterested in us." But I said, "That's not what the evidence shows." I began to talk about the evidence. It shows God's involvement in the cosmos, God's involvement with humankind. I'm giving all this facts, all this data. I started talking about the evidence of cosmology and physics and biochemistry and genetics and astronomy. And her eyes are getting bigger and bigger. And I'm just giving her all this stuff. And then you can't stop me. And I'm going on and on and on. Finally, I turned to my friend and I said, "Can you believe it?" I happen to walk in front of her. She said, "What's a deist?" My friend said to me, "Lee," she said, "Buenos dias." Yeah, I really wish that were a joke. That's exactly what happened. It was really embarrassing. As I thought about this question, does science disprove God? What about that? The truth is, there are a lot of militant atheists who make this assertion, that science disproves God. I was an atheist for much of my life, but my wife, who was an agnostic, became a follower of Jesus. And I began to see positive changes in her character and values and so forth. And it encouraged me to begin to investigate, is there any credibility to any world religion, but especially Christianity? And one of the paths that this took me on was the path of science, and to investigate afresh what the evidence is of science in the 21st century. And my conclusion, based on the evidence I've seen, is that the evidence of science points toward the existence of a creator who just happens to look amazingly like the God of the Bible. I think it points, the evidence of science points toward the existence of God. In other words, that science affirms what the Bible says in Psalm 102, verse 25, when it says, in the beginning, you, God, laid the foundations of the earth, and the heavens are the work of your hands. And I'm going to discuss three areas of science that, in my opinion, don't disprove God's existence, but support the fact that there is a supernatural creator of the universe. The first category I want to look at is called cosmology. Fancy word, all it means is the study of the origin of the universe. Where did the universe come from? You know, for centuries, people thought the universe has always existed. But thanks to persuasive philosophical and scientific discoveries over the past several decades, virtually all scientists are now convinced that the universe had a sudden beginning in a giant explosion. And even though there are various exotic alternative models of the universe that have been proposed by various scientists, the Bohr-Guth-Vilenkin theorem tells us that any universe that is expanding on average throughout its history, like our universe is expanding, must have a space-time boundary in the past. In other words, if a universe is expanding, just reverse time, it has to go back to a beginning point where time and the universe itself came into existence. There must be a beginning according to this theorem. And one of the formulators of this theorem is a physicist by the name of Alexander Vilenkin. He is a director of cosmology, the Institute of Cosmology at Tufts University. And this is what he said. With the proof now in place, cosmologists can no longer hide behind the possibility of a past eternal universe. In other words, a universe that has always existed. He said, there is no escape. They have to face the problem of a cosmic beginning. They have to face the problem that the universe has a beginning. Well, why is that a problem? Well, it's only a problem if you're an atheist. Because if the universe has a beginning, it leads to a very powerful argument for the existence of God. It's got a fancy name. It's called the Kalam cosmological argument. But it's very simple. First, whatever begins to exist has a cause. Now let's stop there for a second. Can you think of anything in the world that has started to exist that doesn't have a cause behind it? No, universally we know that whatever comes into being, whatever begins to exist, must have a cause behind it. So first, whatever begins to exist has a cause. Second, the universe began to exist. In other words, virtually all scientists now concede that the universe and time itself had a beginning at some point in the finite past. And so that leads to this conclusion. Whatever begins to exist has a cause. The universe began to exist. Therefore, the universe has a cause. Now, question. What kind of a cause could bring this entire universe in all its complexity? What kind of a cause could bring a universe into being? The cause must be itself uncaused, because you can't have an infinite regress of causes. It must be immaterial or spirit, because this cause existed before the material world. It must be eternal, because it created time. It must be incredibly smart and powerful because of the precision and the power with which the universe was brought into existence. It must have a personal will because it needed to have made the decision to create. So what have we got here? We have an uncaused, immaterial or spirit, eternal, smart, powerful, personal, unique cause. And that, friends, is a pretty good start for defining God. But I want to pause and deal with two challenges that people often raise. The first challenge is this. People say, oh yeah, well then who created God? As if that's some, you know, brilliant insight or something. Well, if God created the universe, who created God? And that misses the entire point. The argument is not whatever exists has a cause. The argument is whatever begins to exist has a cause. God, by definition, never began to exist. He has always existed. In fact, before he created the universe, time didn't even exist. There was simply timelessness. The second objection comes from a book recently written by Dr. Stephen Hawking called The Grand Design. I don't know if you've seen that book. It was a bestseller. And he makes a very controversial statement in this book. He says this: because there is a law such as gravity, the universe can and will create itself from nothing. In other words, you don't need God. If you just have the law of gravity, it will create the universe by itself out of nothing. Well, this has been, as you can imagine, widely criticized, including by many of his colleagues. And the reason is this. This simply postpones the creation by one stage. In other words, he's saying gravity already existed. Gravity is what caused the world to pop into existence from nothing. Well, the question becomes then, where did gravity come from? Who created that? I mean, who put it there? So you still need a creator. So I think the cosmological argument is extremely powerful. But that's just the first category. The second category I want to mention is the category of physics. One of the most amazing, astounding, breathtaking discoveries of modern science, just over the last 50 years or so, has been that the laws and the constants of physics, in other words, the numbers that govern the operation of the universe, unexpectedly conspire in an absolutely extraordinary way to make the universe habitable for life. In other words, the universe is finely tuned on a razor's edge in a way that defies mere chance and which is better explained by the existence of a creator. Let me illustrate this for you. You know, here in Colorado, we get these beautiful nights where the skies are clear and the stars are out. And if you were to go outside one night and look up in the sky, what if you were to see 50 giant dials in the sky? Giant dials. And these dials, some of them have not just millions or billions of possible settings, but trillions upon trillions of possible settings. And yet, all of these 50 dials in the universe that govern the operation of the universe, every single one of them is absolutely perfectly calibrated to the exact position so that life can exist. That is what modern science has told us. The force of gravity. Everybody knows what gravity is. Well, the force of gravity is set at a particular point, a particular value. And if you were to change that value in just an infinitesimal amount, life would be impossible in the universe. It is just absolutely mind-boggling how perfectly the dials or the numbers of physics are perfectly calibrated. In fact, so much so that Dr. Vera Kistiakowsky, who's a former professor of physics at MIT, who's a former president of the Association of Women in Science, said, "The exquisite order displayed by our scientific understanding of the physical world calls for the divine." In other words, she says, you look at this stuff and it points you toward God. Now, how do you get around this if you're an atheist? How do you get around this? Well, the way you get around it is you say, well, wait a minute. Maybe there's actually an infinite number of universes in addition to ours. And maybe if you take all these dials and you just randomly spin them, in an infinite number of universes, sooner or later, you're going to come up with a universe where the numbers come up right. And that's our universe. We just happen to hit the cosmic lottery. That's what the theory is. Now, there's some serious problems with this theory. First of all, there is absolutely no evidence that there is an infinite number of invisible universes. There's just no evidence for it. Besides which, think about it for a second. If one universe requires an explanation, then an infinite number of universes requires an even bigger explanation. In other words, it doesn't eliminate the need for God at all. So my personal opinion is that if you just take cosmology and physics together, that's enough to establish that there is a supernatural creator. That's how I look at it. But I want to give you one other area of science that I think kind of ices the cake. And that is DNA. DNA, biological information, DNA. You may remember several years ago when the scientist, led, by the way, by an evangelical Christian, Dr. Francis Collins, mapped the entire human genome. Human genome are the chemical instructions inside every cell that contain the blueprint for life. And at the time they decoded this, President Clinton made a very revealing statement. He said, "Today, we are learning the language in which God created life." And that is exactly accurate. DNA is quite literally language. It's language. Your body has 100 trillion cells in it. If you were to open up any of the cells in your body, you would find DNA, and it's famously coiled in that double helix. Well, if you were to uncoil the DNA inside every one of the 100 trillion cells in your body, uncoil it, it would be 6 feet tall. And embedded in that DNA would be a 4-letter chemical alphabet that spells out the precise assembly instructions for every protein out of which your body is made. How does DNA point toward God? Well, I don't know if you saw a movie. Not too many people did, but did you see a movie a few years ago called Contact? Did you see that with Jodie Foster? It was actually pretty good. Nobody saw it. That was their problem. There was a movie done based on a book written by an atheist astronomer by the name of Carl Sagan called Contact. And the premise behind this book is, and this is true, that scientists are searching to see whether there is any life outside of Earth. And so how do they do that? They've got radio telescopes that are scanning the heavens 24/7 looking for a message from space. But the fictional part of this book goes like this. As the radio telescopes are scanning the skies, they're only getting static, just random sounds of the universe. That's all that scientists have ever gotten, just random, you know, static from the stars. But in this fictional account, in this book and movie, all of a sudden, they start to get a transmission of prime numbers. So what's their conclusion? There must be an intelligence behind it. As Carl Sagan himself said, get this, the receipt of a single message from space. One message is all we need from space to let us know for sure that there's an intelligence out there. If a single message from space would be enough to conclude that there's an intelligence behind it, what about this incredibly vast storehouse of information inside every cell in your body? You see, nature by itself can produce patterns, but it cannot produce information. In other words, let's say you're on the West Coast and you're walking down the beach in Laguna Beach, and you see in the sand, in the wet sand, you see ripple marks. It's a pattern. It would be logical for you to look at that and say, oh, the action of the waves has created this pattern in the sand. Because nature can create patterns. But if you're walking down the beach and you see in the sand, John loves Mary, and a heart around it and an arrow through it, you would never say, oh, the waves created that. Why? Because nature can produce patterns, but nature cannot produce information. The universal fact is this. Whenever we see information, whether it's a computer code or a newspaper or a painting on a cave wall, whenever we see information, always, 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 there is an intelligence behind it. Reminds me of the words of King David in Psalm 139. When he said, for you, God, created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. And it's not just Christians with a predisposition to believe who are coming to that conclusion. One of the most famous atheists who've ever lived. In fact, he was called the most famous and most notorious atheist in the world. Was a guy named Anthony Flew. Dr. Flew wrote numerous books on atheism, had his PhD. He was considered the leading philosophical atheist on the planet. And yet, a few years ago, he shocked the world by announcing, you know what? Oops, I was wrong. God does exist. And it was so shocking, honestly, I didn't believe it. I'm a skeptic. And I thought, I read about it in the newspaper, I'm not going to believe it till I hear it from him personally. So I tracked him down. And I sat him down. And I said, Dr. Flew, you're the greatest atheist on the planet. How in the world, after 50 years of this stuff, do you suddenly say, oops, I was wrong, because you now believe in God? What caused you to believe? And he looked at me and he said, Lee, it was the integrated complexity of the biological world. The kind of stuff we were just talking about. And then he wrote a book called There Is a God. Friends, science does not disprove God. On the contrary, I believe the evidence of science points powerfully in the direction of a creator who looks suspiciously like the God of the Bible. And I came to the conclusion on November the 8th of 1981 that it would take more faith to maintain my atheism than to become a Christian, based on the evidence I'd seen. That the most logical and rational step I could take would be a step of faith in the same direction the evidence is pointing. So what do you do with all this? What do you do? I would just briefly apply it in two ways. First, for those of us who are followers of Jesus Christ, I would say, you know, we have to understand that more than any time in the history of the world, we have science supporting our claims of the existence of God. We have more evidence now than we ever have had in history. And so we should be willing to engage with people and talk to them about this kind of stuff and do it, as 1 Peter 3:15 says, gently and respectfully. And then finally, if you're here and you're just kind of checking stuff out, I just want to leave you with one last thought, and that is this. This creator we're talking about is not the deistic God. He is not some distant, detached, disinterested deity. You can know him personally. You can encounter him. You can experience him. You can have a relationship with him. Relationship begins in this world and goes on forever in the world to come. That's the best news of all.
Yeah, really a powerful word today from Lee Strobel and the case for a creator. Friend, I hope that that blessed you as it did me. If you missed any of today's program, or if you want to go back and re-listen to it, or maybe even share it with a friend, you can go back if you're part of the WLUJ family at WLUJ.org. Click Mark and Friends tab, or if you're part of the Great News Radio clan, just visit greatnewsradio.org, and you can go back and re-listen to today's great message from Lee Strobel on the case for a creator. And just with a couple of days left in the month of April, be sure to get your April edition of Prime Lifetimes, a great extension of this radio ministry, our great publication, Prime Lifetimes. More details on where you can get your copy at a few hundred locations and beyond at primelifetimes.com. Well, Fred, I'm going to hang up these headphones of mine. Until next time, just remember that you are salt and you are light and you are the hands and feet of Jesus.